Hello and welcome to the Free from Bulimia panel discussion. My name is Kristen and I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic. There are many ways that compulsive eating presents itself in a membership of Overeaters Anonymous. Compulsive overeating, anorexia, and bulimia are the three most common. Today's panel will focus on recovery as it applies to bulimia. In today's session, we will hear from each of our speakers for 15 minutes and then have questions and answers for the final 20 minutes of our time. Without further delay, I would like to introduce Deborah, who will share with us for 15 minutes.
Is there someone chiming?
Yes.
Fabulous. Thank you very much, Kristen. Not that there's a fabulous crowd in the back here. We do sometimes tend to be in the minority. Hi, my name is Deborah. I'm a compulsive overeater, vomiter, and drug addict. And I'm grateful to be here today. I was asked to speak about 2 hours ago. So I'm grateful to be included. It is the group that I belong in. I walked into Overeaters Anonymous May 15th, 1981, which is about 34 years ago. And I like to say that the only things that I did right were I kept coming back and I kept breathing. And truly, breathing was an option because I was doing a lot of what I call shopping for bridges. Are the rocks sharp enough? Is the water deep enough? Is that subway train fast enough? Because my life was full of desperation and suicidal thoughts were in my head every day. I have both ends of this disease. I certainly could relate to every compulsive overeater that I heard. I stand just about a little over five feet tall. And my top weight was over 175 pounds, and my lowest weight was about 102 pounds. So I got it all. And I am also recovering in Alcoholics Anonymous. The reason I talk about being a drug addict is because I used cocaine to stop eating. It was a wonderful method to not be eating and have lots of energy to exercise and run around all day long. So I've been clean and sober for 32 years, even though I was in this program first. That's easier to do. It was much easier to simply put down the substance than to what we have to do is deal with our food every day, at least three times a day, if not more. In April, if I'm willing, because God's always willing, if I'm willing to stay abstinent in April, I'll be celebrating 25 years of continuous abstinence one day at a time. And thank you. But it's truly a miracle, and it's been none of my business. It's been none of my business. As a bulimic, there's this different thing. It's almost like we can walk through the world playing I've Got a Secret. You know, I'm 300 pounds inside, but you don't know it. And so I always felt like I was faking. I was a fake in the world because I was faking you out, and I could fake your believing anything that I said that I could do. And so I always felt like a fraud. And I always felt like fraud. I could give you all sorts of long drunk logs here and eat logs and food logs and places where I stole food and, you know, dirty bathrooms that I threw up food and ate, you know, from garbage and, you know, have really heinous food bottoms. But if you are listening to this somewhere else or sitting in this room today, you've had enough to bring you here. So your bottom is enough for you, hopefully. And I just came from the workshop on willingness. And obviously, if it took me 9 years of being here and two trips through eating disorder units to get the abstinence I have today, willingness was not something I came in with. I came in with desperation, but I didn't come in with willingness. I knew that something was wrong, but I'd also grown up as one of these people who said, in a family of like intellectuals, like you're smart enough and you're capable enough and you can figure it out. And I spent a lot of time trying to figure out why I was doing this. Yet this is a program of us with a spiritual solution. And that spiritual solution is often not tangible, like in words. It's has to come from a belief. Like that second step asks me to believe and to take a jump without knowing how far down the net's going to be, or even if the net is there. Just jump, and we will catch you, is what you tell me here. And I didn't have the faith that any of you were going to catch me. You know, I've been like, I have a pull up yourself up by the bootstraps mom. She's 93 years old, still believes that way. And God love her, it's worked for her, but it never worked for me. And I still walk into that home, and the first thing I do is feel like a small, scolded child who looks in the cabinets for something to eat and never finds the comfort there. You know, the comfort isn't there, and it's not even a home I grew up in, and I still feel like I walk in the house and open the cabinets to look for comfort in the food. And the food does not bring me the comfort. So what made, you know, somebody asked me, you know, somebody came to me earlier today, and it had been in one of the marathon meetings on bulimia, and she was talking about the not committing her food. We were talking about that, and not she had never picked an abstinence date, and I said, you know, I didn't pick my abstinence date. I only realized that my abstinence date was my abstinence date in hindsight because I didn't throw up anymore. And it was like, well, one was, you know, I actually had to look, but there was no burning bush. There was no parade that said, Deborah's going to get abstinent today. Yahoo! You know, it was this very quiet thing. It was like, I can't do that anymore. And I was full of food. I had binged. And I went to throw up. And I couldn't do it anymore. I'm not one of those bulimics that the food just falls out of. I was like one of those bulimics that I had to stick my hand in and pull that food out. It was like an act of violence to myself. And I was standing there, and, you know, in those eating disorder units, here's some of the $25,000 knowledge that I'll share with you, you know, that this is a disease of rituals and practices. And especially for bulimics, we had to have our mix of food and the right warm water and the throwing up bathrobe and the toilet in the this way and the, you know, rituals and practices. And, you know, I qualify, and that's what it was. And, you know, I had the granola softened by the ice cream, by the, you know, I hope this is not too graphic, but if you're a bulimic, you get it. And, you know, I got there and I couldn't do it. I'm like, I can't. It was just like quiet. It was like, I can't do this. And I walked away full of food. And I realized that part of my personal story was, I eat it, I own it. And that's my bottom line abstinence today. I eat it, I own it. There is no giving back food. And that includes like running it off at the gym or anything like that. I eat it, I own it. And at first, I gained weight because I had to be willing to, you know, eat 3 pans of lasagna and 4 chocolate cakes and keep it. If that's what I ate, then I was abstinent as long as it stayed in. And I gained some weight when I first got abstinent, about 15 pounds. And I realized that the food that I was choosing was not leading me to be comfortable in my body. And then I had to be willing to make different choices, and the road got narrower, and it was a process. The food choices, you know, even in the big book, it sometimes talks about going out and doing field work. Well, we have to go out and do field work, and I had to go out and find which foods worked for me and which foods were not supporting my abstinence. And I talk about those foods as the foods that take me away from God. You know, I have foods that, you know, are perfectly fantastic in every diet magazine in the world, and I can't eat them abstinently. Cottage cheese. Okay? I want a bathtub of cottage cheese. I like cottage cheese. I want all the cottage cheese. I cannot eat that portion that they say is a healthy, normal portion. So I've had to surrender a lot of foods that in other places look healthy because they just sing to me. They just make way too much noise. And so I have the willingness today to not eat foods that interrupt my communication with God. And like I said, it is a process. Because as I find them out, then I had to go through the let's make a deal phase. You know? So, you get it. Like, okay, maybe I can have it once a week on the weekend, you know, and I play the game until it's like I've gone into the boxing ring with Muhammad Ali one too many times and got knocked to the mat again and again and again. This disease will always win. There's no exception. And I love the part in the big book where after the How It Works section, there's the ABCs, and the C is, you know, God could and would if he were sought. I like to personally have to change that in my mind, because if I ever think that I found God, like, hey, I got this down, I don't have to come back. It's God can and does as long as I continue to seek him. And I continue to seek his will in my life and be open to the idea that his plan for my life is very different than my own. And that my plan for my life got me in chairs in 3 12-step programs. That's where my ideas got me. I have become grateful to be like a worker among workers. And I was not a team player. Growing up, I was the, you know, walk to the beat of my own drummer. And it left me kind of lost in the forest. And you all rescued me, you know. And you all said that here's the lifeboat. We've got it. We're rowing. Come on, jump in. And that's kind of an analogy that's in the AA 12 and 12 in the first step and the 12 and 12. And the answers are in the steps, and I did them really, really slowly, really slowly. And that's why I like to say the only thing I did really right was that I kept coming back. And somewhere a lot of years sober and abstinent, but with just sort of like a half measures kind of life, I would see people who had come in a long time after me and had a lot less abstinence getting the things I wanted in my life, like dating, relationships, family, all those things. And I'm like, well, why are they getting those things? I've been here longer than they have. And then I started listening, and they were doing what we call around here the work. And I was just kind of doing the first step and the 12th step. I was abstinent, and I was telling you it was a great place to come and get a life. And I had to start looking at my character defects and the places where I needed to change. And at about 16 years or so, my sponsor, who, like me, shares all three diseases, so gratefully I don't have to have separate sponsors. I got one that covers everything. Said to me, you're clean, you're sober, you're abstinent, and your relationships with other human beings stink. You need to go to Al-Anon. And I went to Al-Anon. You're looking at a person who couldn't ever get past a second date, like with anybody ever. And because of the work that I was willing to do in Al-Anon, I got married for the first time at the age of 56 years old. I know, it's really kind of a miracle, right? And have two grandchildren today and just all sorts of really cool things. Things that are truly like the beyond your wildest dreams things. And I have that in my life today because I'm willing to not have a planned idea of what my life's supposed to look like. I do know that that I didn't imagine being here today, up here on this. So I'm really grateful for this opportunity to be here, and that willingness, surrender, prayer, meditation, a relationship with some higher power, even if it has to be the group that goes before you, other people in recovery. You know, this program is full of all sorts of catchphrases, and one of the ones that I really like to share is that failing to plan is planning to fail. I've gone everywhere all over the world, abstinently, cruises, Istanbul, Russia, Tahiti, abstinent, 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 abstinent. And I know that my own head, it's like, you know, they say your head's like a bad neighborhood, don't go there alone. So I don't go there alone, and I check out my thoughts that I think are like, oh, God told me this, with another human being. And I say my prayers and have a willingness that comes from I don't know where. And since I seem to be stumbling around here in the last minute, I'm going to say thank you to the panel for asking me to speak. And I'm going to ask you all to forgive me because my unexpected, I wasn't supposed to be here or wasn't planning to be here. I'm going to be leaving early. Thank you.
Next, Hannah will share with us for 15 minutes.
Hi, I'm Hannah, compulsive overeater, bulimic. Hi. Really grateful to be here. I guess I'll just start off by saying I came into the rooms, I believe it was 2011, on and off, but I really came in 2012 is when I was on my knees. And when I first came in, I didn't really think I was a bulimic. I told my sponsor, I said, well, I used to throw up like once every 6 months, and then it became once every 3 months, and then once a week, and then once a day, and then it started getting out of control. But I would still kind of be able to manage the bulimia. And she was like, no, you're a bulimic. You need to identify as a bulimic. And I was like, okay, you're right. Like, I'm throwing up my food. I'm not taking accountability for what I eat. And I look forward to those binges and those purges. I'm a bulimic. So, let's see here. I moved to Los Angeles when I was 18. And, I just remember feeling, I mean, growing up, I was a perfectionist. I need to be the smartest, the funniest, the most outgoing, the skinniest, the most attractive person in the room. I'm very self-centered, and this program has really changed my life. But I came to Los Angeles from Ohio, where not a lot of things happened. You know, I was very kept in, and I was pursuing my dream, which I still am, and I came out there and remember seeing just a bunch of girls that looked a certain way and were a certain structure, and I thought, wow, like, that's what I need to be to fit in here. That's how I need to be to feel perfect. And because I always wanted to feel safe, no matter what, and I wanted the easiest, quickest way to do that. And I would start. I remember I went out one night and I had I was taking some drugs, and I came home after a night of like a big sushi dinner and desserts and yada, yada, yada. And I ended up throwing up because I was so sick. And I remember just saying, like, this is it. Like, the light bulb went off. Like, I have found the secret, like, the way I can be skinny and eat everything I want, because I know I can't stop eating. And I knew there was something wrong with me. And so after, you know, I had been seeing somebody who prescribed me, illegally prescribed me phentermine, which is a drug that you lose weight on. And I was probably, I mean, right now I'm probably 10 pounds lighter, not even. I don't weigh myself anymore because the scale was every day, it was just my higher power. So anyway, I was hooked on those phentermine pills. I was taking one every day, and I was doing Weight Watchers with it, and my weight went down really quick, and I was, I loved that, and just the insanity of restricting. I would count every single point, because I did Weight Watchers for a minute, every single point, whether if I was making a soup, I would, every single thing, and for weeks and weeks, I would just obsess over what I was eating, how I was eating it, when I was eating it, are you like, just every single thing about food and body, is this going to make me fat? And just it totally, it just insanity. And, yeah. And then, and then I would mess up or I'd binge, and then it was the fuck it's. And, I, you know, just binged and felt like shit, and then you'd have the hangover the next morning, and it was just getting out of control. My life was completely unmanageable, and there were nights when I was in the parking lot of Ralph's with a box of donuts just crying, and my poor mother, who was the only one I felt like I could tell, I would call and just be like, just crying. I just needed help, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. I was, you know, my mom and I, God bless her, she doesn't have this. She would, you know, she would be like, well, maybe you need to go get a blood test, and what can we do to fix this? And, you know, I've tried everything, hypnosis, everything. And I was just eating and throwing up. And, I came into these rooms and I heard you guys, and I was just like I could just be myself and know that other people struggled with this. And this place has really, has been home for me. And I haven't thrown up since July 2013. And it's a miracle. And what the other speaker was saying was, if I eat it, I own it. My sponsor told me that all the time. And there were times where I was just, I have eaten so much and I'm just on the floor, like in fetal position. Like, I just need to throw up right now. Like, let's just make this exception. Like, just this one time, I literally need to throw up. She was like, nope, like this will pass. This moment will pass. And I would just complain to fellows, like the discomfort, but it, you guys were there, and, I got through it, and, there's nothing like talking about this to people. Like, nobody gets it unless you're here in these rooms and you're one of us. And, so when I first came to the rooms, my abstinence was no binging, no purging. And that was, I kind of had this pink cloud of abstinence for about 7 months. And, and then I started, I nanny, and the food I would eat there got heavier and heavier, and life started kicking in, and I was always calling my sponsor, is this a binge, I don't know what to, like, should I start over? And she is a long time in recovery for bulimia hardcore, and she was just like, you know, why don't we, if it's okay with you, why don't, like, she suggested that I just change my abstinence to bottom line no purging, because to start over for me as a bulimic is just like the door open to keep throwing up, and just to let myself say, fuck it. I can just whatever, like start over. And, that really helped me, cause it kind of I beat myself up, a lot, and to be able to say, you know, it's okay, I overate that, but I'm abstinent, I didn't throw it up. And to this day, I've definitely binged, and, it's something that I'm working on, by coming back to these rooms and being honest. I think being honest is what's really number one for me is being honest. So Yeah. I mean, it's definitely like, it's a day at a time. I wake up and I get on my knees, and I don't do this perfectly, but I get on my knees. I say the serenity prayer, the third step prayer, and I do kind of like a customized prayer, like, God, please, let me, show me your will today and give me the knowledge to carry that out. And then I ask for him to, remove my obsession with any of my red light foods. It was very helpful for me to identify those foods, my green, yellow, or orange, whatever you call them, and then the red light foods. So for me, like a lot of sugar, protein bars, I can go ham on protein bars, like, anything fried. So I just ask that God, please give me the willingness to not eat those foods for today, because once I have one, depending on my spiritual condition of that day, I can just, you know, keep going. And, yeah, so I'm really, really grateful for OA. It's completely saved me. And, I know that like every day is a new day now. I can start over. And, a speaker from last night said something like, we start and we continue and we continue. We start and we continue. If that's just what we keep doing, then we'll be okay. And like, you know, when things get bumpy, I know like I can just, I have a solution now. Before it was just like shit's flown, you know, it's, I have a solution now and I have you guys, and, there is hope. So, oh, I have 5 minutes. Wow. Let me think if there's anything else I want to say. No, I think that's it. Is it okay if I leave it at that? Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Next, Mila will share for 15 minutes.
Hi, I'm Mayla, recovering anorexic bulimic compulsive overeater. Hi. I really like the focus of this meeting, because bulimia is the thing that brought me to my knees. I had anorexia for several years before I was bulimic, and the anorexia was so isolating, and the bulimia seemed to be the thing that was going to give me a social life. And, you know, I was going to have my disease and be in life as well. It was going to be the solution. But the bulimia and the places it took me brought me to my knees. And when I came into these rooms, I came crawling. The way I describe my bulimia is possession. Like, I felt possessed when I was in my bulimic phase, because from the time that I would start my binges to the time that it would end, I wasn't there. It was as if, I don't know who ate that. Like, I don't know who ate all of that, except I would see my stomach protruding out and I would be in so much physical pain and run to the nearest restroom. So bulimia, I guess saved me too, because I really thought I was in control and it took any sense of control that I thought I had. So I'm grateful for it today, and my bottom line abstinence is no throwing up. I came into the rooms April of 2008. And I'm going to talk about what it was like a little bit, because what it was like and what bulimia made my life was, you know, every meal was thought about, and where the nearest restroom and where I was going to throw it up was thought about. You know, the door, how long the door of the restroom, if I was out and about, was the thing I would consider. I still to this day have, you know, restaurants that I would do the act in, I guess, pretty much. And I can't go in there because it brings up so much. Like, it brings up so much of what my life was like for me. I had a bucket in my room because I didn't want to bother my family. And I had a vomit bucket in my room that I would, I would take to the trash before anybody saw. There was so much shame around this disease for me. It was insane. I thought I had some semblance of what I was doing, but it ruled me. And so when I came in, I wanted help. I was really scared. Like, I was scared because it was my companion in life. It had become such a safe thing for me, that giving it up just seemed like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do without this thing, but it's killing me. And I actually walked into an anorexic bulimic meeting on a Tuesday night. It's in Santa Monica. And there were a bunch of women. It was a women's meeting. And it's like these beautiful young women who were talking about this disease, and everybody had beautiful lives. I was starting college. I remember isolating. This disease was so isolating for me because every single thought was about how I can get rid of this, what I ate, what I was going to do. And so, I don't know. I wasn't enjoying anything. And this being the weekend, weekends, oh my God. My bulimia was, I ate everything. I threw up everything. It was until I couldn't throw up anymore. Like, there was no end point. And so, to think that you can recover from that and to think that you can have a life was just, like, beyond me at the point that I came in. But I did come in, and I looked around, and I asked what you did. Like, what did you guys do, you know, to have a life? Because this thing that started out as kind of, well, there's a lot that happened in my life that I guess I'm not going to get too much into right now. But thanks. I really thought I had this thing under control. And when people were talking about letting go of control, because that's what the steps talk about, release this control to a higher power, it frightened me. It really frightened me, but if I didn't do this, what was the alternative? Like, it was pretty much my desperation that allowed me to, you know, do the work. I have a sponsor who's bulimic, and I guess that was important for me because she understood me when I was describing what was going on. I've had two sponsors in program. And both of whom were bulimic. Not that it matters, but when she described her story, it just sounded so much like my story. And bulimia was about burying every single feeling that ever existed. And I felt like I was on a high and I could rule the world. And at the same time, I'm a piece of shit. Like, that's kind of the extremes that bulimia was. But in doing the steps, and in turning my will and my life over to God, so much of that has been removed. I can't even explain how much peace and life I have today. In the big book, like, it talks about having the peace of God. And, you know, there's so much that goes on in life, but just having a higher power, that because that was my higher power, my disease, my bulimia was my higher power, and it was my constant companion. And so to replace that with a higher power, and to have this higher power be this thing that's always with me, and to feel protected and to trust, has been life altering. And that, you know, that has been like one step at a time for me. But it's through doing the steps, you know, calling my sponsor, using all the tools that this way of living has become my lifestyle. And I would not change it for the world. And I want to talk about this. So I got better, and I went off to college, and you're in the college scene, you're in the partying scene, and so I had about 2.5 years at this point, and I remember drinking and eating a lot of food and throwing up. And so I started my abstinence over after 2.5 years, after doing everything, not because I left program, but because my disease lives here and thinks if I, you know, blame it on the drinking, I can get away with it. That's the kind of thing I live with in my head. And so the next morning I called my sponsor and I told her, I know I was sick from the drinking, but I knew I would get myself sick from the drinking, and I knew I can get away with the eating. And so I started over. And so now I'm, God willing, because like the previous person shared, God is always willing. You know, somewhere in February, I don't count days as much anymore. It's like 4 years. I would be coming up on 4 years, but that scared me and really made me realize that this thing just does not go away. Like, it really does not go away, and it tricks me into thinking I can blame it on, you know, this, let me drink, or if I, you know, if I, there's just so many ways that it comes out and makes me think that I can get away with it. And, you know, I'm the third person to say this. I eat it, I own it. Well, so much of bulimia for me was not, I didn't take accountability for what I ate. It's like, I eat it, but I can get rid of it. So who cares? I will eat as much as possible. And so accountability and honesty are such a huge part of my recovery. I tell my sponsor, if things look a little weird, I call my sponsor and I'm like, okay, this is looking a little weird. I just want to be honest with you. And I don't do this for her. I do it for me because I know this thing is deadly. Like, it's just there and it's deadly. The longer I stay in program, the more I get everything that people used to say. I used to hear people say so many things, and I'm living them. My life looks so different than when I came in. And still, every single day I get on my knees, I ask God to help me. You know, I do some writing on the daily reading. And same thing at night, like I go through my day, and I thank God for my day. I have a gratitude list, and if I try to take care of my 10-step stuff, like, in the moment, but if I'm feeling the resentment, or if I'm feeling, you know, just I can feel it in my body, I try to take care of that. So really cleaning up using the steps and not lying, just the honesty, really allows me to live a life that is free from this. And I honestly want to say I know how it works, but I just tell me, like, I just follow what they tell me to do. And it never gets old, and I'm not cured from this. I think when I understand, like, I will never, like, there's no cure. This is the cure. So I feel like the relapse that happened really allowed me to see that. And I'm really grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be of service. And this program has saved my life. So thank you.
And lastly, Karen will share for 15 minutes. And then just as a reminder, after that, we'll take... people can raise their hands for questions and answers, okay?
I'm Karen. I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic. I am The hope that I have to offer is that I came in younger than you guys, and I'm still here. And I, my qualification when for being asked to speak was that I put down I had 30 years of recovery from bulimia, and I don't live here. They seem to be very excited to hear somebody other than somebody who lived in Los Angeles. So I'm Karen. I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic, and I live in Oakland, California. So come on up, I guess. But I will say I grew up here. I grew up here in Encino, and my very first meeting was in March of 1985 at the Darby Clubhouse. I'm sure that, some of you have been there or some of you started there as well. There was no anorexics or bulimics in meetings when I came. There's got to be somebody else who's been here a while. But in addition to that, for a little historical context, nobody wanted to hear me qualify as a bulimic. They were pissed about it. They were voting in intergroup as to whether I should be allowed to even say that, although I had been here long enough to know you couldn't kick me out no matter what. You know, you didn't have that power. So it was like, I'm a compulsive overeater and a bulimic, and I knew they couldn't really stop me from saying it. And like everybody else, I was desperate and I was dying. So there was that. Then there was the short-lived stint of a group called Vomiters Anonymous. Does anybody remember Vomiters Anonymous? So it was mortifying enough to have to become, yes, exactly my point. It was mortifying enough to have to come in and be a compulsive overeater and be associated with all of you, you know, to show up to a group that was called Vomiters Anonymous. I don't even know. It might have lasted months. It didn't last very long. So kudos to all of you who are showing up, because I have to say the shame and the self-hatred that comes with this disease almost killed me as well, and I made it up as I went along. I had no role models. I had no one else to talk to about this. So I came in March of 1985. It was kind of on the uptick of inpatient eating disorder units, so they were dumping all of their anorexics and bulimics in our meetings. So we were there, but I can't tell you that they were particularly happy to be amongst us. I didn't go to an eating disorder unit. And so they were there, but man, it was a revolving doors, and I was scared. I'll try not to cuss since I'm talking to him, witless. And I was scared because I was watching people die of this disease. I was watching people's health be ruined. I was watching their teeth go. I was watching, hearing about them vomiting blood. I was hearing about people being hospitalized, and I knew I was just right there as well, too. And there was nobody really to kind of guide me with it. The people who were my peers in this scared the shit out of me, and the rest of you didn't want to hear anything I had to say. And you didn't even want me to qualify. So I came into OA through the back door of another program, but I have no idea how I heard about Overeaters Anonymous. None whatsoever. Somewhere I heard there's a program like AA for food. And it was like, and I got here as fast as I possibly could. My first meeting was at the Darby Clubhouse. There was a newcomers meeting. There was a young kid named Brian B. Some of you might know him. He's not around right now. Who led the newcomers meeting. He was 15 years old, and he'd been here for 3 years already. He had a really large weight loss. I still know him. I don't talk to him a lot, but I still know him. He lives in San Francisco now. I didn't know what Overeaters Anonymous was about, but I knew you meant business, right? I knew this was different. And I think people out there still know it's different. Have you ever tried to approach anybody about coming to OA? They're like, oh, no, I'm not that bad. I don't need that. So I knew you guys meant business. So I came to that first meeting, and I don't remember a lot that Brian said. He spoke very quickly. I remember an elderly man who was there who just had a heart attack, and he wanted to know what he could and couldn't eat. And then there was an anorexic woman in the room, and I remember her because I could see her knees through her sweatpants. And I never thought I would identify with somebody like that. And she spoke, and I spent the rest of the meeting crying. So I qualify as a bulimic, and like everybody else, I'll tell you how, you know, what it was like. I never was a thin bulimic. I came in about 40 pounds heavier than I am now. And I didn't know I was bulimic. I'm not sure how I didn't know, but you know, we're kind of good at that kind of thing, right? You know, so what did my bulimia look like? I vomited, I took laxatives, I took diuretics, and I used enemas. And, when I came in, I thought I was a bulimic because I was a compulsive overeater. That kind of, if you ate as much as I did, you would certainly need to be rid of it. And so I came into OA, and I, somewhere in about the first 30 days of my program, I realized I was still doing these things. Thanks. And I wasn't eating great quantities of food. So the first thing that kind of I got here was that, you know, get a food plan, get a way of eating. And I still do that. I have a way of eating. I pretty much eat three meals a day. I can have a snack in there. I work funky hours. I work in healthcare. Sometimes I work a swing shift. Sometimes I work nights. I have to have some flexibility. And since I can't really trust myself solely with food, I have to have a higher power that comes with me when I'm making choices around food. So that's way in the future, though. So I got here. You know, I got here. I was 20 years old. I'm 50. This is my I turned 50 this year, and part of my coming to this birthday is a celebration of being 50 as well. So that's kind of one of the reasons. It's been 30 years in the program. I've never been to an OA birthday party, so I'm really glad you guys are here. What else do I want to say? So I started eating like a normal person, right? And I had a way of eating that I always wanted to eat like. And I just never could. So that was kind of how I established my first way of eating. You know, I really wanted to be a health food eater. I dropped out of high school because I was so self-obsessed I couldn't walk down the halls. Went to Birmingham High here. And was gaining and gaining and gaining, and I finally just left high school. What did I drop out of high school to do? It was the 80s. I became an aerobics instructor, right? So I can tell you the people in my home group, and those of you who remember the 80s in Los Angeles at gyms, right, I was her. You know, I had the headband and the big hair and the whole deal. So my brothers, my family, and people in OA in Northern California still tease me about that part of my story. But, you know, and it was like I was up in front and hating myself, you know, and I wasn't thin. You know, I was still fairly heavy. My story with food is I did all of those things, led myself to a career where I could focus on body weight, eating, and pretend to be healthy and hate myself in front of people on a regular basis. I worked at one of the larger health clubs here, and I remember at the end it was a 3,000 square foot room with mirrors, and I remember thinking, I think Deborah hit on it, standing up in front of there and being like, I hate myself, and watching the hate mirrored back from all of you. You know, not a pleasant way to live. So I got to OA and I started kind of eating like a normal person. I started to have a spiritual ideal for the way that I could eat, which is kind of still what I aim for today. And I still was doing these things. And so, like everybody else said, the first thing I began to do is if I ate it, I kept it down. I had no connection with my bodily functions. I don't know if anybody else relates to this. I lived from my neck up and my wrists down. My hair was always done. I had very long nails. I don't anymore because I work my hands. But and I had lots and lots of jewelry. I still love jewelry because I literally lived from my wrists and here. And when I began to eat like a normal person, I also had to figure out body sensations. And so I'd been using laxatives for so long, I didn't know what it was, pardon me, this is not pleasant, to defecate like a normal human being. So I had to sit with stuff in my gut and recognize when things had moved down enough that it would actually be time. And it took 6 months before my colon started working like a normal human being's, maybe even longer than that. So I learned to sit with food in my gut. And that's not really a spiritual experience. That's a go to meetings, you know, talk to other people. And who did I talk to? So the only people who would really talk to me about throwing up when I first came in were the 100-pounders. Because on the sly, they would come up and say things to me like, yes, I know, I vomit too. They were different, though. They threw up so that they can then go back and do more. Me, my bulimia is about, it comes in, I stuff down every feeling I ever have, and then I purge it out. And that's my understanding of myself, why, even though I was eating like a normal person, I could not stop the vomiting and the laxatives, because I still needed the purge. I still needed to fix my feelings, you know. So my first year, my sponsor said, your job is to figure out what you can eat and sit with your feelings. 30 years later, what do? I eat like a normal person. I sit with what I feel. The truth is, the peaks and valleys of what I feel are much less. You know, I'm always a person of big emotions. That may never go away. But the kind of, you know, needing to eat over my feelings, the feelings have mellowed. The feelings have gotten softer. It took many years. I have other emotional problems. I have other, you know, issues that I had to get help outside of this program for. And those are healing or healed as well. I can tell you I've recovered from depression. I never use the word recovered in terms of my bulimia. I'm recovering. It just frightens me too much, you know. I'm not immune, even though it's been 30 years. So what else? So in my first 30 days, I got this sponsor. The first one I got, she's still around here somewhere. Her name is Beverly. I hope she's still with us. She's not that much older, 5 minutes. 30 years and 15 is not easy. But she took my food. I started calling in my food, and then she told me she had never done an inventory, so she couldn't help me through the steps. And I couldn't sit with myself. And the experience of being me as with an eating disorder is I wanted to crawl out of my own skin. And I knew that the steps would probably be the only way that I got any peace of mind whatsoever. And I still think this is the only way that I can get peace of mind. So I found this other woman. Her name was Patty A. And she was up here speaking. She had lost 100 pounds, and she still had 100 to go. And for me, it was recovery to ask someone to sponsor me who was fat. I just want you to know. I didn't like being seen with fat people because then you might notice I was fat. And she growled at me when I asked her to sponsor me. I could see that she really wanted nothing to do with me. I was a nice little Jewish girl from Encino, and she wanted nothing to do with that. She had kind of fled her own background. But she said, call me. And I called her a couple days later, and she sat with me for the next year at Biff's Coffee Shop in Reseda, which no longer exists, I understand. And it's a terrible place to read your inventory because everyone can hear you. But she sat with me. She opened the textbook with me. She said, if you look at an old big book, I don't know what they look like now. Most of them we use the paperbacks, but the hardbacks have a cover, and it says our basic text. She opened it to that, and she said, this is our basic text. And she took me through that book, and she told me how the information in that book applied to my disease and my recovery. We didn't have OA literature then. And I'm still kind of rusty on it. I'm sponsoring some newer people now who really gravitate towards the OA literature. So I try to be open-minded, not one of my better qualities. You know, this is, you know, 30 years later, I'm like the jaws of life with my mind, you know. So I'm trying, but my maintenance is still the big book in the AA 12 and 12. Why? Because I know where to go when I'm in trouble. I know where to go when I need to grow and change spiritually. So I just kept coming. I don't have a lot of time. Like I said, it has been about not vomiting. It's been about, I do count my compulsive overeating time. I've got about 7 years from compulsive overeating. I've had long stretches of time. One of those times that I overate, the last time was 2007. It was in the middle of a night shift. I wasn't spiritually fit. You know, actually, that was 2002. 2007, someone plopped a plate of stuff in front of me at 3 o'clock at a work conference, and I wasn't spiritually fit. You know, I don't have reasons why I compulsively overeat or why I'm a bulimic. I just am. If I spend too long on the whys, I'm in big trouble. I have a woman in my home group who says, if your house is on fire, you don't look for the reason the house is on fire. You get out, right? So I don't spend a lot of time looking at the whys. I spend a lot of time doing the very basics here, which is going to meetings, having a sponsor. 30 years later, I still send someone my food via email. And I can also claim, you know, I'm sounding like a historian here, but the truth is we didn't have email when I came in either, right? So the emailing my food into somebody every night has only been for, I don't know, the last 7 years, something like that. I still do all the things that I learned to do here in my early days, and it is possible to recover. It is possible not to relapse. It is possible to get well, healthy, and whole, because that's what's happened to me here. So I think I'll wrap it up, because you guys have listened attentively to many people. So thanks.
Okay, thank you to Hannah, Mila, and Karen, and to Deborah, even though she's not here. Yeah. And now is the time for questions and answers. Please raise your hand, and I will call in as many questioners as possible. Your questions can be directed at one person specifically or generally for the panel to answer. Please be aware that we are recording this panel, and when asking a question, your voice may be audible on the recording. Who would like to ask the first question?
Well, I think I said earlier in my share that my sponsors both have been bulimic, and I think sponsees I've had have also been bulimic. And I think that's because they understand just when they talk, there's just an understanding that's kind of unparalleled. But if somebody's working their program and if somebody has what you want, I get so much out of everybody's leads and shares. So for me, that has been my experience thus far. But at the same time, I do think it's how somebody works their program and their steps. So it's, you can have the understanding, but it's more about how the program is worked on a day-to-day basis. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, I'll kind of agree with that. Both of my sponsors have been bulimics, and that's been very helpful to me. But then again, I do relate to 100-pounders. I do relate to male, you know, anorexics. I mean, everything. So I think it's just how they work their program. I think it depends on the people, but some of my sponsees too haven't been bulimics, and it's worked. So I think it just depends on what, how that person works their program and that kind of connection that you feel with that person. But I think it's doable each way. But as a bulimic, it's very helpful to have somebody who relates to the accountability of throwing up and whatnot. So. Or of keeping your food down. So,
I guess that's the answer. I didn't have the luxury. You know, I really didn't. There wasn't anybody around to guide me. And I've had a funny path here, right? Basically, as being somebody who felt like there weren't a lot of us around, and there were even fewer anorexics around, I had to really carve my own path here. And I feel like I have to offer that, too, that one of the reasons I think that I've been able to stay is because I've been able to say, screw you, this is my path. I deserve to be here. I earned my place here. And so I never went to somebody kind of related to the disease. In the beginning, I really made it up as I went along. I'm happy to sponsor somebody who is bulimic or anorexic. The anorexia is a little tougher for me to do because I was not a restrictor. And I think the answer is spiritual no matter what, you know, and in anorexia, sometimes we're just letting go of the control, right? You know, and I just watch some of these women hold on till they die. So I haven't had that experience of having a sponsor who's bulimic, but I've still gotten plenty of help.
So I think the question was, how would you describe to a newcomer what freedom is? And to me, freedom is being with people I love and sharing a meal and not thinking about the meal and being with the and just being with the people, seeing people in the eyes, like, experiencing life and being present to it. You know, just being able to just pick out whatever clothes and leave. Like, all of that, like, every little thing was such a struggle. And I'm talking about that in regards to the food. So just having freedom to eat the food and food be food and nothing more. And then in regards to the spiritual solution, for me, it's like, God's got this. Like, I don't have this. God's got this. Whatever life is bringing. And so, I just want to say the disease is one part of it. And then living life abstinently is a different part. So, the spiritual connection allows you to have not a life free of problems, but a God that will walk with you through it. So that's what freedom means to me.
I would tell a newcomer to keep coming back because, and not to leave before the miracle happens. It took me probably 8 to 9 months of binging and sitting with discomfort for me to get abstinent, and just over and over again, just feeling like, why me? Why do I have to go through this? But my sponsor just kept, right, getting a sponsor, I would also say, and just asking every morning for that willingness, because that's sometimes all I can do is just pray for the willingness, but just to keep coming back.
I'm not sure this is going to answer your question, but it's something that I'm grappling with in my program today, which is that I'm sponsoring more now than I ever have. Long stretches where I could only sponsor one person. I went to graduate school. You know, I've always sponsored, but I think I'm sponsoring 5 or 6 women right now, some of whom are very new. And I haven't forgotten what it's like. You guys probably got that pretty clearly. I remember what it's like. It's why I still stay here. But my job is to foster their recovery. My job is to figure out how they want to be helped and to help them achieve it. It's very different. It's, for me, a different approach than always what I get in the big book. In the big book and working with others, it says you figure out if someone is willing. If they're willing, you work with them. I kind of am doing something a little different now, which is that I'm showing up however somebody wants me to show up for them and hoping that they find it. It's very frustrating as a, you know, as a member and as someone who's sponsoring now. You can't, for me, I can't just say to somebody, don't eat no matter what. You know, if I could eat no matter what, I wouldn't need y'all. You know what I mean? So I do have to say to people, yes, I'm free. I am free of the disease. I'm free of the self-hatred. I'm free of the body obsession, which I didn't talk about at all. But I'm not free of the body obsession because I love my body. I'm free of my body obsession because I choose just not to think about it anymore. I don't want to. It doesn't help anything. So what I'm trying to impart to people who are newer than I am, and I'm here long enough that I really have to think about it, is passing it on. You know, that's my obligation here, to give back what I've been given, is to say these are the tools, and this is what I did to get free. You know, because, you know, if I say to you, just don't eat no matter what, I don't know about you, it makes me want to punch someone, you know. So I have to share with people the tools, and then I can share that I do feel free, but... It's, you know, they say it for years, simple, not easy, right? You know, I mean, we know what to do. It's just not always easy to do it. Program, but I also want to say I didn't share with you guys what my bottom was. So my bottom with laxatives were on the phone with a sponsor with a handful of Correctol, and she said, are you willing to not take these? And I said no, and I threw them back in my throat and they weren't working anymore, and then I was willing to give them up. My bottom with exercise was strep throat and in a gym with a fever and swollen glands, kind of in a straddle position and kind of like, oh, this must be what they mean insanity. And I'm still a big exerciser. I my hobby is long-distance cycling. I do a lot of things that I'm very active. And this is the part I talked about, is about carving out my own path. And that's what I'm trying to impart to other people. I've never felt particularly triggered. You know, one of the things that happened in the time I was here, it snuck into formats not to talk about specific foods. I don't get it. If there's something I can't talk about, I'm in serious trouble because I got nowhere else to go with this. Again, I think it's about a spiritual solution and knowing in the moment that I'm actually in a safe and protected place. And this is all I got. If there was something else I thought I could do and go, I would do it. But if not, I have to carve out my space here and make it safe for myself.
I can also add that... when I get triggered in a meeting, I try and I ask my higher power to remove that. And then I, you know, if I need to, I'll write about it that night, or I'll text a fellow and just be honest and be like, look, I was at a meeting and this was said and I can't stop obsessing over it. And sometimes just talking it through really helps me, and knowing that what somebody else eats is completely different from what I eat, or how they exercise is completely different from how I exercise, and just knowing that we all have our own paths. Yeah. But that's come over time as well. So thanks.
Now, I guess usually, whether it's this topic or anything else, I try to like pray about it. and just like turn it over. Yeah, because we are so different. Everybody's background or how they deal with the food looks so different, and my path doesn't look like somebody else's. And I have found like a healthy way of exercising for me and what works for me. And it's really, in a sense, appreciating our differences as well, because we have different needs. I don't know if I answered much for that one, but I try to turn it over and really remember that, you know, I can take what I need, like you said, and leave the rest.
Yeah, for me, I've kind of played around with that, and I would say I don't, if I'm feeling, I pretty much eat, what I feel is loving and kind. If I'm hungry, I personally don't say, okay, I need to wait an hour because that's the next time I eat. I will have a loving snack. If I can really feel that that is a dangerous thing, then I will pray and talk to somebody about it, because I can tell when I'm doing it to comfort myself versus when am I actually hungry. And that's a miracle. I usually have pretty similar foods throughout, from morning. I have a breakfast, lunch, I'll usually have a snack, and then dinner, and then sometimes an optional snack. But the whole, if I feel spiritually just shaky that week or that day, sometimes I'll send in my food in advance, and just along the way, say if I change it, just text my sponsor and be like, hey, I had this instead of that, or this with that, and just try and be accountable for what I eat, but I don't keep it strict for me, so.
I guess similarly, I agree with that, because I come from rigidity. And so trying to do it perfectly just makes me feel like I have failed. But what I do is, you know, three meals and snacks, I think two optional snacks if need be. I do try to keep the time, like meaning a certain amount of time in between my meals, because that can affect how hungry I am for the next meal. So I try to be aware of that. But what I actually eat, and even sometimes the amount, because sometimes I feel really full and it's not, you know, restricting to say I'm full right now. So I think that comes with time, and that comes with really bringing God into my meals. And, but it hasn't been rigidity. It has been flexibility and just, you know, bringing the spiritual aspect of the program into the food that has helped.
Because I've claimed my seat. God love them. There's just fewer of them, right? Than there are. And do I reach out to men? I do. I also have the advantage of having had a few years in the program now, and so reaching out to men and talking to men when I was a younger girl felt different than it does at this stage of the game. I'm not sure we have a lot to say about their welcome. It is, I think, even more hidden for men than it is for women, and that's a problem. So, you know, I try to welcome anybody that I know about that. What was the second part of your question? Step 3 and 11. Very exciting. Wow, you know, I talk to God all day long. I pray in the morning as well. I talk, all day long. I ask God to come with me to work. Like I said, I work in healthcare, so you guys have given me a second purpose in my life. And And in the morning when I get up, I read for today. I've been reading that damn book for 30 years. I never remember the same. You know, the passages are new all the time. I read another little for today. And right now I'm reading a little Buddhist reading. I have not explored anything else in the time that I've been here. This works for me. This is what I do. And I happened upon this book in an office once. And I really like it. And the readings are all about staying present and enjoying this moment. So I feel like I'm doing better with meditation and with trying to have a conscious contact lately than I have in a long time.
Men in program and bulimia. I know a couple of men in program that talk about bulimia, but I think it's more, I don't want to say it's seen as a woman. Like, there's more women in program with bulimia. And ultimately, if the program is spiritual, you know, it doesn't differ, you know, what gender you are. You can talk about this because this thing is shameful. This disease is shameful for all of us. And whether it be men or women, I don't ever think being bulimic was ever something I was comfortable sharing. So men, you're welcome to. And then as for step 3 and 11, step 3 is, it's a daily commitment. It's a daily commitment to bring God into your life every single day and ask for God's will. And I feel like I understand what those things mean more over time. Like, the longer I stay here, I understand the steps more clearer. And step 11, the first part of step 11, I have always been good at prayer. I've always prayed to God, but meditation, I didn't think I could meditate because I couldn't stay still. I would hear all of my thoughts and I'm like, this is disturbing me. Like, this is not comfortable. So initially with meditation, it was more, I would find God in motion. I actually use that term because, like, being in movement, like dance, running, like those were ways where I could quiet my mind and actually connect to God for me. And in the past, like, year and a half or so, I have been able to, like, bring programs, different, there's so many tools out there for meditation, and use those to help me learn to meditate. And it's been a newer practice for me, the meditation part. But it actually is, from what everybody else says, it's when you actually get to hear God and really connect with God. So, yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Okay, I think we have time for one more quick question, if somebody has one.
Quickly, I think in being in program, sugar, for example, was something that I initially didn't realize how much of a problem it was. I just became aware of those things, and I guess it would probably initially would be in, like, the yellow light foods for me, that sugary items, but I have to be in a fit spiritual condition to have those items. Coming from my anorexic state, no food is, like, there's nothing I restrict in my food, but I have to be in a good place for me to have food, and sugar, I mean. So, I don't have sugar most of the time, pretty much maybe 97-98% of the time. But if I'm out with people, that's something I, like, or celebrating a birthday, I don't restrict that. But, you know, I'm in the office and there's somebody celebrating a birthday, that's not my food. And, like, it's not my food. And so, actually, making sure that I'm spiritually connected, but if it's something that will break my connection with God, I just don't have it. I think that's my answer.
My sponsor, I remember every time I sent him my food for a while, I had these time periods where I was overeating on mixed nuts, and then the time when I was overeating on these specific protein bars, and my sponsor would just say, like, why don't you cut those out? Have you thought about cutting those out? And I just wasn't willing at the time, but she would tell me to pray every morning for the willingness to stay away from those foods, which I think the more I've done that, the more that's helped. But if I do pick it up, I really just try and I text somebody and a fellow that I feel really comfortable with, and I'll say, I just had this, and I'm just bookending that's the last one I'm going to have. And so they'll usually say something like, be gentle to yourself, like love that little kid that is inside of you that is just wanting to just rebel and eat whatever and all of that. So, cause it's the sick, I always see it as like the sick little girl in me, you know, that I just have to take care of and be gentle with. So, when that does happen, I just try and ask God to remove my obsession with whatever I just had. And I just stay connected and how I stay connected is through you guys. So I'll text or call somebody. So,
I don't
think I have a lot to add. It's all gray. Keep going. Okay, should I take a conscience? It's 5 minutes till, so do we usually end or? Thank you all for participating. I would like to thank Deborah, Hannah, Mila, and Karen for sharing their experience, strength, and hope today. And this concludes the panel discussions for today. There are marathon meetings until 10 p.m. tonight, and two more panels and a sober eating workshop tomorrow morning at 9:30. And just a brief announcement that I noticed on the table. They asked us to announce we need your badge holders. If you are leaving, please drop them off at the front desk. Okay. And thank you for allowing me to be of service.